Russell, hello. Thank you for joining us.
Jim, how are you?
I'm very well, and so obviously are you, judging by all the music you put out. You're on the Gold Coast these days.
On the Gold Coast, yes. I've moved out of Melbourne at the right time. Victoria.
You did.
So I've really gone into a horrible situation at the moment. However, it probably could spread up here because nitwits have been jumping the border and lying about what they're, where they're from and all that.
There are a lot of nitwits.
Yeah, there are a lot of nitwits in the world. Albert Einstein said one of the most fabulous statements I've ever heard. Someone asked him about what it was like being a genius. And he said, genius has its limitations. However, stupidity has no bounds.
That's funny. You've got an album out, actually, at the moment, haven't you? Black and Blue Heart.
Actually, I wrote one of the tracks on that with Eddie Rayner, who's over in New Zealand.
I know.
Been a long-time friend, yeah.
And one of the songs you wrote with your lawyer.
That's correct, yes. He's been for years trying to get a song on one of my albums, and he writes a lot of nice songs, but they just weren't quite right. And this particular song, he sent it to me. I said, I tell you what, I love the chorus, but I want to change everything else. So I sort of changed it, and that's how that ended up on there. And he was chuffed. He was really happy to get a song on there.
Always keep on side with your lawyer and your accountant.
Exactly. I try as hard as I can.
And back in 2012, there was the big album, Shark Mouth. You melded Aussie history with some great blues. You've been pretty active. With Shark Mouth, you got a lot of old knowledge, I think, about Australian history from your grandmother, didn't you?
Well, I grew up in Richmond, which is an industrial suburb. Like, my playground was on the weekends when all the factories were closed on the Sunday. It would be round breaking into the factories, not stealing anything, but breaking into them just to look around and look at the machines and look at whatever was in each factory. We'd swim across the river into the back of the factory, Hanley's, and go in there. And it was a very high gangster area. If you look at all those underbelly shows,
yeah.
A lot of those gangsters came from Richmond. I ended up going to school with people who committed it. There was a really famous bookie robbery here called the Great Bookie Heist. So I went to school with those guys. Some of the very, very scary criminals, the Brian Kanes. And even as a young kid, my grandmother would say, oh, when I was a young girl, we would walk up Bridge Road, and there on the corner, I think on the Divine Hotel, was Squizzy Taylor and all these thugs. They'd always be standing there, you know. So those stories I was regaled with as a young boy, and everyone in Richmond knew who Squizzy Taylor was. I never even thought about doing songs about them, and I decided to do a blues album because I'd started, when I first started playing music, I started playing blues, and I thought, I haven't had success for 30 years on the charts, so I'm just going to do what I want to do. I'm not going to try and chase the monkey's tail. I'm not going to try and chase the Pied Piper. I'll just do what I want to do musically and be happy with it. Then I thought, if I'm going to write blues and roots music, I can't write about Mississippi or New Orleans. I could, but I don't feel it. It's not in my bones or my DNA. So I thought, what better than to write about Australian characters like drifters and hobos and gamblers and criminals, because that's where I grew up.
That was the right approach. It struck a real chord, didn't it? I mean, apart from your claiming Farlap as an Australian racehorse, when, as we all know, across the ditch, he was from New Zealand. But, I mean, let's not...
No. He was Australia. Russell Crowe is New Zealand.
And then there was Van Diemen.
No, we're very good at stealing things if we think they're appropriate. But then again, if they do spend 15 minutes in Australia, they become Australian.
That's true. I mean, you'll be saying Eddie Rayner's Australian, I know.
He is, isn't he? Didn't grow up in
Could be. Now that you mention it. Van Diemen's Land in 2014, that went right up the charts. 2015's Red Dirt, Red Heart, ARIA Award for that. You see, you are remarkable. You're an inspiration. As you've said, you know, there were 30 years of nothing until your late career revival, and now, you know, you have become a real institution again.
Yeah, it's luck, though. You can never really plan anything in the music business. It's you've got to have a little bit of talent. You don't have to have too much, but you have to have persistence and an enormous amount of luck. I've known so many people that I think are the most talented people, and nothing has happened for them.
Yeah.
And I could never understand it. One of the reasons I did the blues album also was my dear friend Jim Keyes from The Master's Apprentices. He had said to me, "When are you doing an album?" And I said, "I'm not. Why would I?" I said, "It costs me a lot of money to do it. No one ever plays it on radio." And I said, "No one ever buys them." I said, "What's the point?" And he said, "You should be ashamed of yourself." He said, "That is your obligation." He said, "That's your body of work." He said, "You have to do it." He said, "If you were a cabinet maker and you make beautiful cabinets and beautiful woodwork," he said, "you would make another one and you'd put it in a warehouse."
I've read you say you have to follow what's in your heart. If you love polkas and polkas are your passion, do polkas.
Exactly. Like, so many people go against the grain. I call it chasing the Pied Piper. People who look at the charts and listen to the music and go, "Oh, that's successful. I'm going to write like that. I'm going to be like that," and they chase that style. But that style has already left the port. That ship has sailed. Very hard to get back onto that ship. So you've got to really find your own thing that you really love to do. And unfortunately, a lot of times people do find that thing and they play it and they play it, but the clock never spins around to the time when people, and that's if you want to be successful. Otherwise, you just do it for the love and you love doing it. But if success is a very strange, very, very odd maiden, and very hard sometimes to root the success for what you do. And if you're lucky enough for the clock to turn and you're standing in the right thing at the right time, and as long as you're loving it, you've got a good chance.
Yeah, and that's a very good philosophy. You know, you deserve the good luck now, though, because you had bad luck. You made one terrible error, I think, when you went to America and met the mogul Clive Davis.
Oh, that was a dreadful error. He was a lovely man. God, I really liked him. And I walked into his office and sat down and played him four songs, and he made me feel so comfortable. He grabbed it was almost like a dining chair and brought it over and turned it around backwards and sat on it with his arms on the back of it. And he said, "Just play me some songs, Russell." And he said, "Don't be nervous." He said, "Listen," he said, "I know all your work." He said, "I'm familiar with all your songs." He said, "I know how you sing. I just want to hear what you've got at the moment." He listened to it and he said, "Listen, I love your voice. I think I could make it for you. Could make it here." He said, "I don't hear these songs working in America." He said, "I've got some lads downstairs. I want you to listen to a couple of your songs." And I said, "Yeah, great." And they came up and they played me three songs, which I thought were horrifying. And I said, "Oh no, I don't like them. They sound like vaudeville songs." And I passed on the deal, but I'd been told that he was a great record mogul, and we passed on it. I wanted to do my own songs, and RCA had said, "Yes, we love your songs, we'll go with you." But in hindsight, I should have gone with Clive, because Clive was not an idiot. He would have recorded the song with me. It could have been someone else's, and he would listen to it and gone, "Nah, you know what? That's not going to work. Let's get another song."
Yeah.
But who knows? I'm a big believer in science, and I love quantum physics, and maybe I was meant not to do that.
Exactly. Or maybe there's an alternative universe, Russell, and in that universe you said yes to Clive Davis, and you're now a billionaire living in L.A.
All became, at that time, it was a very bad time in LA, all became a coked-out idiot. You know, that's what was happening to many people over there, yeah.
Yes, that's true too. This would have been a nonsensical conversation 50 years ago when we didn't know a lot of stuff, wouldn't it? And 50 years ago today, Rachel was at the top of the New Zealand charts. Can you tell us the provenance of the song?
The song, I was in America. I recorded it initially over there. It just wasn't right, so I brought it back to Australia and redid it.
And what a smash hit it turned out to be.
Yeah, it was a lovely song. One lovely thing about, because I loved coming over to New Zealand and touring, it was just such fun. And one lovely thing I remember, probably about 10 years ago, I had to go over to Wellington, and there was a big auditorium in Wellington. I can't remember where it was. And the security people were all milling around and people getting up and making speeches and people were singing. And I got up and I was singing, and I was singing my songs, and the audience were listening, but the security guards were nonchalant. They didn't really care until Rachel. And I started playing it, and you could see nearly all their heads turn. And at the end of the performance, as I came off stage, all the security guards were standing at the side of the stage to say hello.
Ah.
And they said, "Is that your song?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah, that's my song." And, so it was a lovely feeling. It was great.
Ah.
Wow, that's nice to have that effect over in New Zealand, yeah.
Yeah. And what a time that was, because the Vietnam War was an awfully long time ago, but it was front and centre in our consciousness. And Rachel just cut through. Everybody knew what you were singing about.
Yeah, well, it was a soft protest song, which was good. When Raymond Froggatt wrote it, I thought he really nailed it.
We must mention as well your first big hit, the song that shouldn't have topped the charts, and then it topped charts in the US as well, and here and Australia, the song that was far too long and amazingly psychedelic, The Real Thing.
Yes, well, that was when we recorded The Real Thing. The record company from Sydney, EMI, we'd done it in Melbourne, and they hadn't heard it. And they said, "Listen, we've spent so much money, we've got to come down." So they flew down to listen to this song, and Ian Meldrum, who produced it, was terrified. They'd hate it. And we all said, "Don't be an idiot. This is fantastic. They're going to love it, you know." The engineer and myself were trying to gee up, and then say, "Oh, no, they won't like it." And they came down, and we put it on and played it from start to finish, and, yeah, he was right. They hated it. They thought it was the biggest piece of rubbish they'd ever heard in their life. And they flew back to Sydney without even talking to us, and rang us after the weekend and said, the song is so much rubbish, we are not going to release it. It's an embarrassment to EMI. The only thing that we might do is release it in Melbourne to try and make some money back that you've spent all that money on it. So we got in a car and drove around the country and went to Sydney and saw all the program directors up there and said, "Would you play this?" And they've all gone unequivocally, "Yes." And so we got them to sign a petition and send it to EMI. So they relented and released it. It became gigantic. Same thing happened with Shark Mouth. When I did my album Shark Mouth, not one record company in the country was prepared to take it on because they all thought it was rubbish. They thought it would never, ever, ever work. And so it's funny, isn't it? The two biggest successes I've ever had in my career, the record companies didn't want.
You're the personification of perseverance. You are a real exemplar of just keeping going.
Yeah, I guess so. Since I gave up brain surgery, I can't go back to that, you know.
It's great to hear. And it's great to hear you're still going so strong. You are an inspiration, as I said before. Lovely to chat with you, Russell Morris. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much. And hopefully I'll get over to New Zealand at some stage and try and do a tour. I've got some great friends over there, so I'd like to do that.
We'll tell the security guards.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Russell Morris.